Welcome to Beat the Block, a podcast powered by BeatStars, the world's number one marketplace to buy and sell beats.
This is a show where we go deeper than the surface and talk about the best producers and artists in the game, not just about their successes, but also the blocks, dark times, mental health, and unpaid work that comes along with it.
More importantly, we find out they bounce back and turn their downsides into upsides to make a career out of doing what they love so you can too.
Get ready to experience this episode of Beat the Block. What's up, gang? This is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Ill Brown.
What's good? It's Trox.
Yo, and this is your girl, Candy.
And you are with the incomparable Beat the Block podcast, powered by the good folks at BeatStars that cash our checks. Today's guest, I mean, man, he really needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway, just because I'm always extra in the intros. That's kind of my signature, you know what I'm saying? Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest hasn't just worked with legends like Snoop Dogg, J-Lo, Lil Wayne, Christina Aguilera. He was raised by one. His father, Bernard Edwards, one of my favorite bass players, by the way, one of the founding members of the disco band Chic. Man, in addition to all that, he is working closely with Dr. Dre and is signed under Aftermath Records, man. Everybody give a warm welcome to the homie Focus. What's good, big bro?
How are you, brother? How you doing?
Can't complain, man. In the crib, the AC is blowing. It's hot as balls outside.
And there it is.
There it is.
That was the description of life right there.
Absolutely. No doubt, man. So, you know, without further ado, man, we all got things we got to accomplish this evening, I'm sure. One of mine is trying to find some brisket of some sort. So let's get right in. You know what I'm saying? Let's jump right in, man, if you don't mind. Fuck it, man. Let's get to it. To start off, man, there's a whole lot happening in the world, especially in the climate of all the civil unrest, man, especially surrounding George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, everything that's been going on. Not to mention the situation in Atlanta right now that's going on, you know what I mean? How's things in your neck of the woods, man? How you feeling mentally about all of that? You know what I'm saying?
I've been dealing with racial profiling, systemic racism and all that stuff since I was young. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, it's unfortunate, but it hasn't changed. You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to be more reliant and hopeful on God and his promises, because we're just seeing the same thing happen over and over again, and it's not yielding new results. So it's disheartening, to say the least, you know?
Absolutely, man. It's definitely an eye-opener to be experiencing civil rights era, you know what I mean, issues in 2020, man, where, I mean, as a society, we should have already evolved past a lot of those issues. So, you know what? We're going to get to it. You know, it may hopefully sooner than later, but you know what I mean? I think we're seeing the changing of the guard, man. And, you know, I'm not mad at anything that's going on.
Yeah, I hear you.
No doubt. No doubt, man. So, you know, let's take it back to your childhood, man. Your dad, you know, of course, like we said in the intro, being one of the founding members of Chic. And your mama, you know, ran a nightclub, man. How do your parents shape you as a producer and a music lover, man, growing up?
Mom used to work at a nightclub that my dad played at. So, yeah.
Word.
They, if it wasn't for them, I think the love of music is where everything that I got right now, I got from them. You know what I'm saying? So it's super dope to be able to look at the fact that, you know, my dad was doing what he was doing, but my mom also aided in it as well. Like, you know, she gave me my history in music. So, you know, everybody that grew up black knows, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, but then we also know Saturdays we were cleaning.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Saturdays,
Sundays.
Yep. So that's
cleaning with the music playing, yeah, no doubt.
Exactly. So she was the soundtrack to that. And Phyllis Hyman and Angie Bofield and, you know, Anita Baker and Stevie Wonder and Donnie Hathaway, and the list goes on and on. My mom's palette was eclectic, to say the least. You know, Michael Frank, You know, so these people that, you know, Christopher Cross, James Taylor, like this is what I'm hearing in my home. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you can't turn around and get locked into just one type of music when you have that array of music playing around you.
Oh, no question, man. That's definitely how it was growing up for me, man. You know what I mean? Mopping, sweeping, washing dishes, taking out the trash, and singing the lyrics to some of my mom's favorite songs, man. Stuff,
go.
You know, Billy Ocean, Michael McDonald.
Yeah. Yes.
And then on some knee-jerk reaction shit, she'd throw on Kraftwerk. And I'd be like, what the? This is dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, out of nowhere.
Right.
You just start hearing Trans-Europe Express. And I'm like, yo, I don't know what just happened here, but I
dope.
Like it.
That's hip-hop.
Yeah,
that's hip-hop.
Yeah, word, man. So no doubt, man. So you started making beats, man. Man, I had to kind of do a double take, right? Because, you know, I'm an analog gearhead and all of that at heart. But you started on the EPS 16 Plus, which is crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, okay.
You know, how were you developing as a producer in the early days? And, you know, how did you kind of hone in on your sound?
It was a necessity because all my boys rapped. So I think that when you look at a lot of the people that came up with me and my era, it was a necessity. Like, okay, you rap, but we're just rapping over drum loops. We need production. And I was like, okay, cool. I was always into R&B, but it was like, okay, I need to make rap records now. So it was because of my boys, like, all wanting to do rap records and all that stuff. I'm like, okay, I can do it. And that's how I really got into hip hop. And one of my boys in particular, his name, he goes by Black. I went over to his house and he used to DJ, and he had the 12-inch Bring the Noise by Public Enemy. And that one 12-inch changed my life. It changed my life. I was like, yo, I want to make records like that. I wanted to impact like that. And that record changed everything about me. And I was like, okay, cool. That's when I started really getting into it. Yeah,
that's dope, man. So along with that 12-inch, man, Public Enemy, which was one of the first things that blew my mind growing up. You know what I'm saying? Which other artists around the time that you started getting into hip hop, you know, kind of like, you know, gave you that same wow factor? Like, yo, this is what I want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, one of my favorite producers in hip hop is DJ Premier. So Gangsta, my cousin got me into Gangsta. Like I said, the Bomb Squad. So whatever they were doing, I was loving it.
Yes, sir.
You know, Pete Rock, Evil D. I was a big Bucktown head. RZA, I was a big Wu-Tang head. I had all of their stuff. You know what I'm saying? So just being from the East Coast, even just the Uma, Q-Tip and J Dilla.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's when, like, my whole thing started going. Prince, what's my man? Prince that did...
Prince Paul?
Prince Paul, exactly.
Yes, sir.
De La Soul. So that's where I come from. And it's like the more that I started listening to them and dissecting them, I was on my way to the West Coast, and then that's where I got super influenced by Superfly, Battle Cat, Daz, Quick, and Dr. Dre. So those were my my I need to be like them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. That's literally, you know what I mean, shooting for the stars and landing on the clouds, and you know what I'm saying? No matter what, you're gonna be dope if you aspire to be like those cats. You know what I'm saying? That's ill, man. That's ill. So you know, some of the early records you cut in the 90s, man, before the Aftermath days, man. Let's touch on some of those records.
The first record that I ever did was a remix for an artist by the name of Charisse Arrington. She was on MCA. And
oh yeah,
that was the first time that I ever saw my name on wax, and I lost my mind after that. I was like, I want to be doing everything. I became an artist myself, and I was signed to Street Life Scotty Brothers, and then I just started doing remixes for them. And then after that, it was just, you know, like in the 90s, it was literally just remix work. I was working under a company called Grand Jury, and it was Mike Conception's company. And I was a producer there, and I did a remix for G-Wiz, and I did a few remixes for them, and then I did a few remixes for Shanice Wilson. And yeah, and then I did a song with Black. So that's really where things just started kind of rolling for me in LA.
That's super dope. That's super dope, man. So, as a producer, you know what I mean? It's kind of folklore, kind of to tell those stories of the historic studios, you know, like the D&Ds, you know what I'm saying? Hit Factory, mm-hmm. you know, Daddy's House. If you're in Atlanta, Patchwork, you know what I mean? All the legendary spots, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
What's one of your favorite places to work out of? Although, you know, I'm going to kind of interject and be like, it's a crazy alley-oop to be able to go to the pharmacy all the time, but you know what I'm saying? What's some of your favorite places, you know what I mean, work out of?
One of my favorite places to work out of is home, being honest.
There it is.
I love being at my house. I love this space. I love being around my children. I love the opportunity to go out and get that love when I need it. That's the only thing I'm about immediate gratuity about, you know what I'm saying? So that's one of my favorite places. And then the next is working at Dre's House, because it's just such an easy and relaxed place to work. Yeah, so it's really dope. He calls it the ICU. So.
That's what's up.
The ICU. That's it.
I love that name.
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, yeah.
That's dope. That is super dope, man.
Man, that's crazy. So back when you got started, what kind of business moves were you making, you know, as a new producer and signed to, how did you even make that transition to getting signed when you were doing the remixes?
I just kept being consistent. I think that it wasn't a premeditated thing. Like it really was, I just kept making music and I just kept putting myself in positions to where I can be heard. And I was working with Omar Gooding, and he was doing a show called Smart Guy at the time. And he brought me to the set and I met Jathan Weaver. And me and Jay Weave wanted me to come down to Atlanta and work with him in his production company called Boob Tube. And so long story short, he had a kid named Dax signed to him, and I was producing West Coast music for Dax. And Dax's people had ins with Dre, and that's how I got over to Dre. So it was like, honestly, just making music. I just kept going where I could go to get my music heard.
That's what's up. It was kind of like a one thing led to another type of situation.
1,000%. 1,000%. And it's. I think that a lot of people think that it was just easy. It was never easy. You know what I'm saying? It just was one of those things that you have to keep showing up. And that's the consistency. It's like, okay, I can take being told no or being rejected, but it's like I had to keep showing up.
How were you able to build those relationships? I know, like, one thing always leads to another. You show up at the studio, you create, you're consistent. But tell me about how you were able to build those relationships in your early time period of getting started.
I think that one of the most important things was being transparent, being real. I think a lot of people wanted to go into those rooms and shine and outshine the next person. And it was just a bunch of... you know, throwing the junk on the table and trying to see whose was bigger and all. I just wasn't part of that. I never was a part of that. I never got caught up in that. I always was authentically who I am and who I was and who I will be. Like, I feel like that's my even kilter in this industry.
Y'all hear
my dog over here. He's losing it. But it's super important. I think that people just understand that whoever I am, when they see me a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever, I'm going to authentically be what I presented to you. And that worked in my career all the way up till now. And hopefully it will continue to work in the future. I hear you.
That's dope. Focus has always been focus.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Indeed. So you already told the story about how you linked up with Dre. It was through a man named Dex. So when did you first meet Dre?
Oh, man. I met Dre through Eric B. And we were doing a record for this kid named RC, who was signed to Aftermath. It was right after the Aftermath Entertainment thing dropped.
Yeah.
He was one of the first artists that Dre wanted to put on the roster and put his stuff out. And we did a couple of records with RC, and that was my first time meeting him. But I was Eric B's, like Eric B was the conduit, and I was Eric B's producer at the time. And so I just did a couple of records with him, and that was cool. But then the next time I met him, it was direct, and it was such a Godfather moment. Like, you know, Mike Lynn brought me into the restaurant, and Dre's back was to the door, and it was like, you know, dimly lit and all that stuff. And I sat down at the table, and like when I sat down across from him, like the moment I sat down, it was like I had the dumbest smile on my face, and I couldn't get it off. You know, and he was just like, man, are you the only time my smile disappeared is when he was like, man, if you ready to work, my face dropped dead straight. Like, I'm ready right now. And so he put me in record one. And that was it. That was all. After that, it was just, I just showed him that I'm willing to be in here from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. I'm willing to be here 8 days out of the week, and it's only 7 days. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had to show him my work ethic was incomparable to anybody. And so that's the only thing I think that's really kept me around.
Definitely. So I've been in Record One. I've been in there with you guys, but I haven't been in there with Dre personally. So explain to me, like, how a session with Dre would go.
I didn't start working for Dr. Dre. I take that back. I didn't start working with Dr. Dre until 2013. So
wow.
The first time I worked with him was for Compton. I used to work for him. I was part of the production team. So, you know, me, High Tech, Denon Porter, DJ Khalil, Battle Cat, like, we were all individual producers, so we would be in our own spaces. But the first time I got in the studio with him, it's just, you better be about your business. You know what I'm saying? So if he turns around and he says, I need this, you better have it ready in a timely manner, in a timely fashion. And I think a lot of working with him has taught me my strengths and my weaknesses, and I play towards my strengths. You know what I'm saying? So in that room, I don't have time to find out my weaknesses. I just got to play towards my strengths. And that's what it really eliminated that gray area for me. Like, I don't know if I can do it or what. I'm going to do what I can do. And then whatever I can't do, I sit back, because we're a team. You know what I'm saying? So it's the first time that I've ever collaborated in my life. And that spawned all the other collaborations that I've been having.
Mm. So do you think Dre is, like, really good at finding the strengths of people? Maybe some strengths that people didn't even know that
yes,
they had?
I think that he's one of the greatest at that. I call him the orchestrator. He's able to turn around and look at an orchestra and find somebody that may be playing the triangle, and then you find out that this person could have played the drums the whole time. You know, he'll push you to your best, and it might be uncomfortable, but at the end of the day, comfortability is not what we're in here for. We're in here to create something that's a masterpiece, and it's going to be uncomfortable. And so I believe that he sees the greatness in people. And if you end up being in the room, you can see the greatness in yourself.
Indeed. Unfortunately, I didn't have the privilege to be in the room with him. You know what I'm saying? But like,
you will.
Oh, man, you know, I'll get my chance one day, you know, but I definitely was in that room at one point. I remember it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ty Cannon that invited it. He invited myself, Nasa, and Paperboy Fabe to the studio. We walk in. I've met you for the first time there.
Mm-hmm.
I met you for the first time. We gave each other a big pound and a hug.
Yeah.
Who else was in there? It was Cardiac that was in there. It was Khalil. He dropped by for a few. Marsha was in there.
Marsha Ambrosius
was in there. Rockwilder was in there.
Okay.
This was 2014, I want to say. This is like...
Yeah. This is like early on in Compton when we were all in the studio.
Yeah. At that time, man, I was just sending folders and folders and folders of stuff to Ty. And I just remember just being in that room. It's just like, yeah, I'm here.
Right.
I got to show and prove, though. And right. I remember you said, like, I wanted to hear something murderous. And then you looked at me. I played like 20 songs, man. I played like 20 songs. And then Cardiac was playing something. And then you were playing something that was just like, it was years ahead of mine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's don't say that, because I don't like when anybody likens themselves to anybody. Trox, you are a beast.
Hey.
My hat's off to you, and I always salute you. You are a beast.
Thank you, man.
I think that at the end of the day, when you go through the training camps that we went through, you know how to show up on training day. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you just know how to show up, and that was your first time. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with that.
Indeed.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's like, at the end of the day, I commend you for not shrinking back. Because a lot of people get in that moment and be like, yeah, I don't have nothing right now, but that's an opportunity. Like, you did not shrink back. It's like, nah, I got crack. You know what I'm saying? So
I learned early on I shouldn't do that, man. Like, every opportunity that I had to press play, I'm going to press play.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? So there's one song in particular that you did. I don't know if anybody that's interviewed you has talked to you about this song too much.
Okay.
I'm from the Northwest, and the Northwest has a really close connection with the Bay Area.
Okay.
Get Stupid by Mac Dre, man.
Yeah, salute.
This would turn the party out every time this dropped.
Thank you so much. That's
dope. Oh, man. How did that come about?
I don't know. I made a beat. It was on my beat CD. And at the time I was working, we were working on Detox. So I was just making beats. I was making about 4 to 5 beats a day. And I would just put them all, I would compile my Monday through Saturday onto a CD and see him on Saturday. And it was on one of my beat CDs. I don't know how to this day Mac Dre got the beat. And whoever gave him the beat told him that Dr. Dre did it. And
wow. Dre was like,
and it's so crazy because Dre was like, man, ain't that your beat? I'm like, yeah, that's mine. And he was like, man, I didn't do that beat. He's lying. Like, he turned around and like, Dre, so anytime there's ever been any talk of it, Dre always backs me like, nah, I didn't do that beat.
Man, Dre, stand up for that, man.
Yeah, he's been always 100 with that. He's never taken any of my credit. He's never put me under him. And it's just like, you know, I'm going to do this and it's going to be me. And like, he's never done that. And I appreciate him for it.
Yeah, because a lot of producers be doing that. You know what I'm saying? They just take
100%.
They just take credit for, you know, whoever their minions are. They take credit for it. And honestly, like, when Dre works with other producers, like, you know, he adds what he adds. Like I'm not sure, like, because I'm never in there with him. But, like,
he's an orchestrator. 100%.
He's an orchestrator. So, at that, you were always good at, you know, networking with people, right?
Like, appreciate it, yes.
How should producers today network, especially in the era of COVID?
Yeah, I think that right now they need to realize that everybody's eyes are in the same place, be it Instagram, Twitter, your social media, Facebook, whatever. They're all in the same place. Perfect example, Dem Joints just did a gram hack of this kid.
Yeah.
Keydron, I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. He did the gram hack and so many people started hitting him. This kid got a deal with Warner. And they just released the record. So it's like, you can't turn around and go, well, I don't know how to, you just gotta find something that's unnecessary. Like, it can't be unnecessary. It has to be a necessary. It needs to be something that we need to hear right now and push the limit. You know what I'm saying? Put it out there, and you never know who's going to be looking. Everybody's eyes are in the same place right now. We're all looking to our phones and our social medias to find out what's the next.
Indeed, man. Like, I don't know how many times, like, I've posted a beat on Instagram, right? And lo and behold, like, one of my favorite rappers hits me up and asks me about it. Like, it's just put it out there. Like, I think we both share that same sentiment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it gets old to hear about it. It's not mixed. It's not mastered. It's not. I don't want to hear a disclaimer. We're creatives. Put it out there.
Yeah. If it's dope, it's dope.
But even if it's not, you never know. 100% of people that don't put their records out will never know, because they've never put themselves out there on the front line. So if you're saying it's not dope, the only person that judged it was you.
Facts.
I never heard it. You never heard it. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, man, just put it out there. If somebody has something adverse to say about it, then look at if they put detail in there, look at it, go back, rework it, re-put it out. And so I'm not afraid to put out music. If that's how I feel and that's what the moment told me to do, I'm gonna do it.
Yo, what up, Ill Brown? I'm thinking of signing up for BeatStars. What's your experience like?
Man, bro, BeatStars came through for me at a tough time, man. Of course, the industry is much different now. It gave me a platform where I didn't have to build my own website, and I was able to upload my beats and sell them and engage with the community, man. I had a crazy first month, man. Did like 4K in sales.
Wow.
And I've been a fan and a member of BeatStars ever since. Sign up on BeatStars to start making money with your beats. Go to bit.ly/beattheblock1. Again, that's bit.ly/beattheblock1. Peace.
So, I know we all have crazy industry stories. I know you have more than a few. I heard there was a story where some people locked you in the studio for 3 days. How did you handle that?
I made 15 beats.
Hey, that's the way to do it, right?
Flex on them.
I made 15 beats. At the end of the day, it was an experience. It was kind of like my initiation into the West, because I was coming straight from the East Coast. And I can be forthright in saying that it was when I was part of Grand Jury, and that was my first initial work, I guess you would say, my work response to being part of the company. So I went into the studio, I was working, and I came out and everybody was gone, and I was there in a house in Carson, and I couldn't get out. I didn't have a car. You know, I'm saying, I was really fresh out of the East Coast, so I didn't have much. But you turn around and you look at the lemons that you're standing in, and I don't make lemonade. Lemonade is cool, that's cute, and it's sweet. But for me, I needed something a little bit deeper, so I made lemon drop shots. And I made sure that I made, you know what I'm saying, 15 shots. And I had to show them, like, nah, if you're going to put me in that situation, this is what it's going to be. And it was a blessing. It was a huge blessing.
That's a good way to look at it, man, just as an initiation instead of an emergency.
Yeah, you know what? If you look at everything as a negative, then you can find a negative in everything. And you have to find the positivity in something. And I'm like, that showed me what I was made of. It showed that if you put me in that situation, this is what the response is going to be. This is what the outcome is going to be. And I'm like, I'm not scared to say that I showed and proved. I showed out. And it was what it was. 15 tracks.
Indeed.
I still got more of that too.
Oh, for real?
Yeah,
I want to hear that one day, man. Next time I'm in LA, man, I want to pull up on you, God willing.
100%, let's do it.
Man, let's do it. There is one more thing I wanted to ask you about. There was a video of you making a beat on YouTube about 2006, maybe? 2006, 2005?
Which one? When I say...
You were on the NPC?
We're going crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
I ain't saying, yo,
let me tell you something, man. That one, I studied that one a lot, man.
They,
in high school and
that's
everything.
Crazy. They said that's one.
Just the way you chop the sample.
But they
up.
Said that's one of the first. One of it's not like I'm the first, but they said that's one of the first beat making
videos
online.
Wow,
it is.
So that's why, yeah. So it's, that's why there was so many people. Like I've had, you know, a lot of the kids that want me to mentor them. They told me, like, man, that video turned me on to who you are and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, it's a blessing. But I didn't know that that wasn't supposed to be that. I think the company was called Spit Your Game.
Yep.
Yeah. Spit Your Game. You feel what I'm saying? So wow. Spit Your Game, they just came to my studio. That was my studio in Atlanta. And he was like, you mind if I film you working? And I'm like, go ahead. I'm cool. And I was there with Nicole Ray. And I was just working.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
If you look at me, that's who I was talking to. Like, I was like, it was her and her manager. And I'm like, what y'all want me to do? Y'all want me to go crazy? What do you want? So I'm talking to her. And she's like, man, just do you. So I just started working. And it was, you know, with the way they spliced it and all that stuff, even putting in my imperfections and how I was messing up. Like, I'm like, man, at least you didn't make it look like everything I do is, like, okay, I'm so on point. And now I'm like, man, just, I'm human. They let me groove out and just, they spliced it. They did all that stuff. I didn't know that what they were doing. So it was really dope.
Man, I just want to tell you, man, that video inspired a lot of us young minds at the time, man. Like,
thank you so much.
A lot of us young producers at that time, like, we looked at that. I'm like, oh, that's how that works. Or, oh, this is
that's
how it's done.
That's a blessing. Yeah, yeah, I've had a lot of people tell me about that video, man. So it's a blessing.
Hey, what happened to that beat, though?
I put it out on a beat CD that I did. And then we never made the song. It never came public. But the song was called Victim by Nicole Ray. You know, it's on a beat CD. I forgot which one it is, but it's out there.
Definitely gonna be on the hunt for that, man. word, man. Look, you got set up for a session with Faith Evans, man. And then everybody dipped out the back door. That shit has happened to me before, man. But let's talk about your experience when that happened with the Faith Evans session, man. How'd you respond to that? Is it even true, first of all?
First off. Is Nardwuar giving you like inside information? Like, what's happening right now? Telling real Nardwuar this right now.
We got sources.
It's very true. I was working with BoobTube for Shakespeare Productions, and I was finishing The Best Man for the Best Man soundtrack with Shakespeare. And I finished the keyboard part and he asked me to leave the opposite door that she was coming in. And I complied. And yeah, so it, you know, it is what it is. Like it was just me. I got ushered out the back door. It was not a bunch of people, it was me. Yeah, I was asked to leave and she came in and she cut the record. And you know, that she came in with Candy and Shakespeare and I had to leave. So yeah, that's real. I still got my plaque though.
Hey, that's what matters. That's what I'm saying.
I still got my plaque. Yeah.
Got your plaque, then that's what matters. So we talk about mental health on this podcast, and I know that we've all, and you know, you've had your ups and downs in the industry. How do you take care of your mental health in this industry? What are one of the things or a few of the things that you do to try to stay on point?
I am a true creative, and when it comes down to it, sometimes I just bottom out. I battle depression, and my depression can bring me to places that I really feel like you can't get out of. So the best thing that I know to do is to remain consistent with my creativity. I'm blessed that I have a beautiful family, so I'm able to immerse myself in the love that I need with my kids. And my wife manages me, so she knows when to push and when not to push on that angle. But when it comes down to it, man, there's really no right or wrong way. No, I take that back. There's no right way to deal with your mental health. Because the truth of the matter is that hole, it's we're all very close to that hole. And if you slip into that hole, however you can stay out of that hole, I can't judge you. But I can tell you that's not the way I would do it. You know what I'm saying? So I know a lot of people will turn around and start going to drugs. They start going to liquor and whatever. They're not realizing that those things are ways that they can get deeper into the hole, because all it is putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. So right now, I'm just really trying to be more positive for other people. I think that just being there and being transparent, like I said earlier, and being tangible with the, even with what I'm doing online, the King's Quarters, I'm just giving a safe room to people to express themselves, and they allow me to express myself. So it's about being communicative and doing the best you can for other people. And that's where I find my solitude, because I couldn't do it by myself, man. I am a creative to the core. And these times right now, if I didn't have those outlets, I probably would not be here right now. That's the honest truth.
Right. I agree. Can you tell people about King's Quarters? I know I've seen it pop up on Instagram, but just so our audience can know, I'm sure you have a lot of followers from our audience that, you know, tune into you and your production. So,
yeah. The King's Quarters, I put it together because, well, first off, it's important to be there and be an ear for people to listen and not to listen to respond. And we have so much going on right now with the quarantine, with the protests, with the killings, with whatever you have. Nobody is allowing our kings, our queens to go someplace and just be like, I don't feel good today. And the King's Quarters is for everyone. I call it the King's Quarters because it's a safety zone. And it's surrounded by kings. We're going to make sure nothing leaks. We're going to make sure that everybody there is feeling good and everybody there is royalty. I have no princesses. I have no princes there. Everybody there is a king. Everybody there is a queen. And I want everybody to understand that when they come in there and they speak, we're here to uplift and build up and encourage. And it's been amazing. Sometimes we'll get, 10, 11, 12 people. Sometimes we'll get four. But you have to show up and let them know on the check-in. The check-in's Monday. The check-out is Friday. I'm trying to see, are you okay on Monday to push through to Friday? And how was your week after that Friday? You know, so the King's Quarters will be forever long. I'm not going to stop doing that. I think that it's important for them to understand that, you know, there are no velvet ropes. I'm here if you want me and you need me. So
that's really dope. I think it is important. The reason why we have this podcast is also so people can hear from a mass of creative perspectives, no matter where they're at in their career. I mean, we interview people that are just now getting in that zone of being consistent, and people like yourself who've been game for a long time. So the key is to find out what works, you know, what's working for you, because creatives, we have real low lows. And, you know, we get on that high and then we drop down. So King's Quarters, I'm going to tell the audience to be sure to follow your Instagram, where you're going to give them that information, and then they can definitely tap in to that.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I love the fact that you turned around and you said something, Candy. I just want to touch on that. We have lows, we have low lows, but we have one high, because we don't have high highs. You know what I'm saying? So it'd be lows and low lows. So if we're not there for each other as a music community, who else is going to understand? Like, it's probably you four that would understand where I'm at creatively, than other people. You know what I'm saying? So it's really important for us to strike up these conversations, and I appreciate you guys for having me.
For sure, no doubt. So you've worked with so many legends, of course. I would say you're definitely in the category of a legend, a living legend yourself.
Appreciate it.
What continues to drive you?
Number one, my God-given duty to provide for my family. There's nothing that drives me stronger than that. And then number two, my passion for making music. I believe without a shadow of a doubt, I was here to ring through music. And that's part of my purpose. So those are that's one and two. That's the 1-2 punch right there. That's the only thing that gets me out of bed every morning.
Yeah, a lot of people, they come in and they want to hit these goals in their career, like working with certain artists or, you know, getting the plaque, getting the Grammy. And one thing's for sure is none of that is certain with this. But I think that over all of the people that we've interviewed, what has stayed consistent is their love for music. More importantly, it's like music is who you are. It's not really what you do, it's who you are. So you have to believe in who you are and who you are meant to be, you know, while you're on this earth. So
you're talking about purpose. Now there's such a deeper meaning to being purposeful than being talented or being influential. Being purposeful gives you a reason why you're here. And that's very huge that you understand what that is.
Definitely. So looking back at your whole career, is there anything that you would have done differently, either business-wise or...
But if I would have done something different, I wouldn't be where I'm at.
Exactly.
You know, so I'd be remiss to say that I wouldn't... I'm lying to you. I'm sorry. I'm lying to you if I say I would change something. Because if I changed it, I wouldn't be where I'm at. So at the end of the day, I love where I am. I love what I'm becoming. And I'm blessed where I am. And I'm blessed where I'm going. So every mistake, every heartbreak, every heartbroken, every horrible situation, it made me who I am right now. And I can only be apologetic to those that I may have hurt in the interim, but I can't change anything. I can't. And that question, as dope as it is, there's really nothing you could do. There's nothing you could do. And I live in that black and white, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's so black and white for me right now.
Is there something that you would tell your younger self coming up?
Yeah, there's a couple of people I would have said not to sleep with. Yes.
I hope everyone takes that in for sure.
That's real though. Oh man.
Let's keep it 100% honest. When you're in a place where you're vulnerable and that love is presented to you, you're going to take it no matter what. And people don't understand that love is not just physical. So don't be susceptible to the word love. Like if somebody says they love you, they can say that and rob you blind and then you never see them again. You know what I'm saying? I would have avoided a lot of heartbreak and heartache if I would have just moved different instead of with that head and this head. You know what I'm saying?
That's one way to put it.
For sure. Absolutely. Any more hard lessons business-wise or anything you want to share with the audience of what they can do or kind of take advantage of?
The most important thing for everybody is to stay creative. We're in an uncomfortable position, and uncomfortability is going to give you your biggest truth. Be transparent and don't be afraid of transparency. Don't be afraid that people see that you have emotions. Don't be afraid that you're giving them something deeper than the surface. Be transparent. We're the voice of what's going on right now, and speak the truth. And that's it. I have nothing else to give anybody because anything past that is way deeper than everybody's thinking. Don't be uncomfortable with telling the truth. If your heart is telling you, I can't do it right now, then make a song about I can't do it right now.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Make a song about I'm not feeling it right now. Make a song about I'm angry right now. Make a song, like, just be consistent and make those records, because you never know, like I said, you never know what the next, what's going on is. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Indeed. Indeed. So, Focus, you've accomplished a lot in your career. What else do you have going on right now? What can we look forward to from you?
I'm doing a project called Focus Presents, where it's all a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
It's all people that I truly love and admire and would do anything for, and they would do anything for me. So it's a lot of names that you may not know, and it's a lot of names that you will know. So that's coming out soon. I want that to be at the end of the tunnel of all of this stuff, because I don't feel right and okay with kind of pushing a project that's not indicative of the times. This whole project is not indicative of these times. It's indicative of a lifetime. And it's important for people to understand I'm not about myself. Like, I really want to use whatever God gave me the platform for to exalt the people that I have on this project. So that's one. And two, my company, Envision Entertainment, which I really want, we're looking to be a label now. Prayerfully, that's going to be something that comes out of 2020, because I just want people, I want to be like Warner Brothers was for Prince. I want to be a safe haven for the creative. I want people to come here and get paid for what they do. And I want them to change the dynamic of what music is. And I want to change the narrative. So those are the two biggest things in my world right now, besides my children and my wife.
Indeed. I can't wait to hear those. I can't wait to hear that project, man.
I'm happy about it. I'm very happy about it.
If you're happy about it, I'm excited for it.
Hey. Absolutely, indeed, man. Anytime us as producers, we are our own worst critics, man. If we're happy with the body of work, then it's going to be fire for sure. So I'm excited to hear that.
Well, you're going to have to let me borrow your hair, bro. I just need to bro, just send it to me FedEx, bro, because that is very, like, you've got the Basquiat crown happening right now. Like,
we could definitely make some money.
I'm feeling a certain way right now. Like, I can't. That is.
And I, like, patted the shit down so it could try to fit on the camera and shit, man. It's like, if I blow dry it out, it's outrageous, man. Like, so I try to mush it down as much as I can, and it just turns into this wild shit that just,
it's all good.
Yeah, man. I it's crazy. I used to always rock it low, man, and then COVID happened, and I woke up one day and was just like, you know what? Fuck it. Just keep letting it ride.
It was the opposite for me.
It was the opposite for me. I saw the bald spot. I'm like, you know what? I'm nipping this problem in the bud. I shaved it all off by the time I was 30.
Wow.
Truck said, I'm coming Anna's home
over,
early.
Candace over here turning around and trying to donate her hair to a village.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to do that, you know?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. She said, yeah. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed.
No doubt, man. So yeah, we're gonna go ahead and start wrapping up, man. But before we do that, tell everybody where you can be found online and on BeatStars if you like, you know what I mean, if you're on there.
Yeah. First off, I want to give a big shout out to Abe. I love Abe, and when he first started doing this, I was trying to be a big part of it. And it was love, me and him, and Illmind. But I think that, I'm not going to say ego, but I will say that a lot of my industry side of me was telling me I need to do things bigger. There's nothing bigger than BeatStars right now. And I think that Abe has really cornered the market and gave a voice to a lot of these kids. So I so appreciate him. I appreciate all of y'all. Salute.
Appreciate you, man.
Man, that's the depths of my heart, man. Y'all can always ask me for any and everything. But if you want to find me, I do not social media that much, but if you want to really get me direct, it's Focus, the number 3, DOTS on Instagram. That's the only thing I check in on. It leaks to my Facebook. I don't check that. And it leaks to my Twitter, and I don't check that. So if you want to hit me, hit me.
There it is.
The number 3, DOTS on Instagram. And I always respond. And I just ask that you give me time because I want you to have my full attention. But yeah. Salute to y'all, man.
Absolutely. I mean, there's never been a time where any of us haven't reached out to Focus and he haven't shown us love back, man. So
Indeed. That's
not any cap right there. That is actual factual.
It's facts.
And that's coming from us directly, man. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. Focus, man, we appreciate you, man. So much knowledge and insight, man. And I hope everybody that tunes into this episode, you know, really absorbs those gems you dropped and everything, man. So much love to you for coming on and blessing us with that, man. We're going to go ahead and get up out of here. I'm your friendly neighborhood podcast host and child disciplinarian, Ill Brown.
And this is your main man, Trox.
And this is your girl, Candy.
And we will catch you on the next episode. 2 fingers pointed to the sky.
Peace.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Beat the Block. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps the show a lot. See you on the next episode. Peace.